Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath, Debbie Bruck, with Dr. Otto Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Good day, everyone. This is Debbie Bruck. Good day. This is Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Today is July 4th, 2012, show number 27, with our co-host, Dr. Adil Kasim, MD, fourth generation homeopath. We're so blessed to have him take time out to be with us and answer all questions that people ask, no matter what they are. We'll see what we can do to answer them. He keeps a busy medical clinic and educational institution, and you can learn more about Dr. Otto by going to his website, www.homeocad.org. That's HOMEOACAD.org. where you can also find a form if you wish to ask a question or contact him. We love to answer your questions on the air. So go ahead and open up the live chat now. Give us some feedback. The more the merrier. It is open. You have time right now also to click that Twitter button or on Facebook. Tell other people what you're learning here. And everyone can join in. This is like a live study group. Remember, if you do have a personal health problem, you need to see your physician, your homeopath. This is an educational broadcast. So we have a lot of news. You know, we're supposed to be working on the Kent repertory and going through the rubrics, but when people call in with questions, this is what we take primary care first. And today is also a celebration in the United States, the 4th of July, Independence. And if it's okay, I thought I would read a couple of lines from the Declaration of the 13 United States of America.
Why not? Happy Independence Day.
Happy Independence
to you, Debbie.
Day. Yeah. Okay, so it says at the very beginning, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bonds which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. And this is the famous line, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. And there's more to that, and I recommend that people read it. We're at that kind of schism right now in America where we have haves and have-nots. We have monopolies and industry. We have government and industry partnering kind of against the will of the people. So you can hear my rebellious words.
Well, to start off this, and as a compliment or a corollary to what you have just read, I quote Swami Sukhapunanda Ji. He says, the yoga of wisdom is, the most difficult task is to open a closed mind.
And that's act, yes, does he have more to say?
Yeah, act on the understanding that great minds have a good purpose, whereas others have only wishes. So, in this show, we try to open closed minds.
Absolutely. Yes. And if we find even ourselves having a closed mind, we have to kind of tease it along and question why, what is our motivation, what are we thinking, what is our highest good, who are we helping, is it ego or is it for the benefit of mankind?
Exactly. So tonight I've got, I mean today we have got lots of questions from various listeners, and I'm so happy that day in and day out I keep on getting the questions. What we started initially as a repertorial reading, well, that stays. But in addition to that, we have got lovely questions, and I'm so happy. They're all clinically oriented. They're very much, and they're asked by many homeopaths who are in genuine need of answers. So I'm so happy to answer them as to the best of my abilities.
I'm very excited to hear what the people are interested in learning.
Well, the first two questions I'll read out. One is from Dr. Manmohan Singh from Gwalior. He says, sir, I am a homeopathic practitioner since past 3 years. I was listening to your last show on Blog Talk Radio. And I wish to ask, should constitutional medicine be always given to all patients opting for homeopathy? If not, then in which patients do we give constitutional medicine? A very beautiful question he asked, and a very practical one. I'll answer that. The second question, which is also very similar to his question, is from Dr. Deepak Vyas from Anand, Gujarat. He says, congratulations for your wonderful shows. I have downloaded all of them and keep on listening. The place where I practice homeopathy, I have lots of patients suffering from high cholesterol levels and high triglyceride levels, and I really liked your episode in which Feltowry was discussed. Kindly tell me if pathological remedies like these are justified in practice. Well, thank you Dr. Manmohan as well as Dr. Deepak Vyas for listening to my shows and asking questions. See, we have got various types of patients coming to our clinic, and I'll be answering both the questions in a single answer. As I said, various types of patients come to our clinic. And now, let me read aphorism number 76. Aphorism number 76 says, only for natural diseases has the beneficent deity granted us in homeopathy the means of affording relief. I repeat again, I am reading only the first two lines. Only for natural diseases has the beneficent deity granted us in homeopathy the means of affording relief. So, Dr. Manmohan, yes, constitutional medicines are only meant for natural cases. Constitutional medicines are meant for achieving cure. But then, not all cases can be cured. And that is why we at the National Academy of Homeopathy India have segregated the cases which come to us into different case types. The first case type, chronic case types, why this segregation is done? Because once the cases are known which type do they belong, the approach can be decided. Now this approach is very important because it gives us a sort of rule to follow or an area to follow. As I was talking about natural cases, because Hahnemann has clearly written, only for natural diseases has the beneficent deity granted us in homeopathy the means of affording relief. So first of all, what are natural cases? Natural cases are those cases which have got lots of physical generals, 3-mark physical generals, or mental generals, or both. Number one. Number two, these natural cases have come to the homeopath very early in their life without many suppressions or without any evident drug treatment before that, before coming to us. In such cases, we have an evolutionary history. For example, from tendency to catch cold, it has developed to pharyngitis. From pharyngitis, it developed to asthma. So we have an evolutionary history. Such cases having evolutionary history will respond to a constitutional drug because constitutional medicine can be selected. You can frame an entire constitution on the mental and physical generals. When you administer a remedy, you can also see the reverse situation, reverse order of appearance of the symptoms, and thereby Herring's laws of cure. So, in such situations, cure is possible. But, my dear friend, not all patients in the entire clinic, say 100 patients coming to you and in your clinic, can be of these types. There are various other types. So in our setup, only 20% of all the patients are natural cases. So only in those cases, we can achieve cure and we have to totally focus on constitutional remedy. So as your question goes, that should constitutional medicine be given to all patients opting for homeopathy? No. Constitutional medicines are reserved for patients who are natural cases or in those cases whom you are opting for cure. And when I say cure, I mean Hanumanian cure according to aphorism number 1 and 2. The other types of cases are, second is incurable case. An incurable case would be case type 2. In such cases, we have got extremes or end results of the cases. For example, rheumatic heart disease is the actual disease, but mitral stenosis is the end result of rheumatic heart disease. Ischemic heart disease is a disease per se, but myocardial infarction or heart attack is the end result of the ischemic heart disease. So you can't do anything about end results or pathology. In such incurable cases, you have to give palliative treatment in the form of so-called symptomatic drugs. If you can select an acute remedy or a symptomatic remedy, depending upon the state of disposition, as is given in aphorism number 211, 212, 210, 211, and 212. In these three aphorisms, if you see, Hahnemann has specifically said that you can select a remedy on the state of disposition. But again, in clinical practice, either homeopath is not always able to perceive the state of disposition, or the patient may not have a state of disposition which corresponds to a particular remedy. So in such a situation, then you can give physiological doses of a particular drugs, for example, mother tinctures, or very low potency drugs in decimal scale. Or else, you can also give some pathological prescriptions like Feltauri, what we have talked about last time. We know they are pathological prescriptions, but still, in those incurable cases, just to afford relief, you can give them. Because our aim is not to cure them, but only to relieve them. So these are separate, second type of cases. The third type of cases are symptomatically, they basically don't have any symptoms. But when they go in for a health checkup or an accidental insurance checkup, or suddenly find high raised cholesterol levels or high sugar levels. So these people come into silent disorders. Or they come into one-sided diseases. Now, one-sided diseases, one-sided cases, or silent disorders, they don't have symptomatology. So if you don't have a symptomatology, you can't construct the totality. And if you can't construct the totality, how do you give a constitutional remedy? So in such patients, we can't even give symptomatic drugs, and neither can we give constitutional remedy. So in such cases, we start the therapy with no salts. So these are case type 3, one-sided cases. Then we have got another set of cases who are mixed cases, but they are settled. They have been taking allopathy for, say, diabetes. Then he is taking another set of Reiki for depression, and another set then for constipation. He is taking some herbal medicines, and there is a mixture. And he has now come to you for some skin complaint asking for homeopathy. So this type of case is a mixed case, and maximum cases what we get in our daily practice belong to this strata. They are already taking some drugs for this different complaints, and they ask to you, they come to you only for a very specific complaint. That is only skin. Doctor, please don't touch my diabetes. You have nothing to do with my prostatitis, nothing to do with my constipation. I'm happy with all those treatments. You treat my skin disease. Now, there are such patients. Now, what do you do with them? You always can't take a history. They would not give because their mindset is completely blocked. They want an allopathic type of homeopathic treatment. Allopathic meaning symptomatic only. I've come for skin, give me for skin. If I've come for high cholesterol, only give me for cholesterol, nothing else. So in such situation, it becomes very difficult. Even if you ask them to stop those medicines or curtail down the doses, they refuse to do so. So, but we can't always tell them to go away. We have to treat such patients as well. So in such cases, again, symptomatic prescriptions or pathological prescriptions have to be given for a certain period of time. Although they may be justified, they may not be justified. That's a separate question. But still, homeopathy medicines need to be given. So, seeing these are in general, we have divided cases. And whenever a case comes to me, any cardiac case comes to me in such a situation, I would divide them and then decide the approach. It becomes very easy for me. So I hope Dr. Manmohan Singh and Dr. Deepak Vyas, I have answered both your questions. The constitutional medicines need to be given for natural cases. And for natural cases, again, if I read aphorism number 7 says, now, as in a disease from which no manifest, exciting or maintaining causa occasionalis has to be removed, we can perceive nothing but morbid symptoms. It must regard being had to be the possibility of a miasm, and attention paid to accessory circumstances be the symptoms along by which the disease demands and points to the remedy suited to relieve it. The aphorism number goes, aphorism 7 is much longer, but I am reading the first line. So, whenever a patient comes to me, in my natural case, my first important thing is, if there is an exciting factor, I have to take that into account because I can treat it as an ailment from. There are many cases where a patient will complain to me, Doc, after I was insulted by my boss, it was since then that I started getting chest pain or angina pectoris. Now, after I was insulted by my boss is an exciting factor, and that causes an ailment from, and an ailment from is an extremely important point in the history because it decides your remedy very thoroughly. So, when I deal with natural cases for selection of constitutional drugs, I should first know the exciting factor. But the exciting factor comes, it's only one-time phenomena. It has already come. There's always a maintaining factor, either factor or factors, which maintain the disease. If you don't do anything about those maintaining factors, it is impossible to get the true portrait of the disease as per aphorism number 7. And if you don't get the true portrait of the disease, you cannot prescribe a constitutional remedy. So, the second point of a physician in natural cases is to remove the maintaining factor as much as possible. And that maintaining factor also includes drugs, which we discussed last time. For example, if a patient who is a known hypertensive since past only 1 year, but is on some beta blockers, say atenolol. So, his physical genitals, atenolol is a drug which decreases sympathetic activity. So, suppose if I am taking atenolol and I originally used to sweat very, very much, my sweating rate was very high. But now after atenolol, I sweat very less. But as a patient, I would not report this history to you. So if I don't report, my basic symptom of excess sweating will be completely lost. And the remedy which has been taken out will not cover the excess sweating. So that will be a wrong remedy. So exciting factor and maintaining factor. So exciting factor is a one-time phenomena, so nothing to worry about. But the history should be known. But the maintaining factor has to be removed as much as possible. The patient should be helped to remove by the physician. Only after that you can get the true portrait of the disease. And after you get the true portrait, then can a constitutional remedy be prescribed. As far as Dr. Deepak Vyas is concerned, that yes, pathological prescriptions are justified in homeopathy remedies, are justified in practice only in case type 2, that is incurable cases, where your purpose is not to cure but to relieve. And second, in mixed cases, where the patient is, come what may, is not ready to give you complete history, the mindset is fixed for a particular symptomatology or a particular biochemical parameter, for example, high sugar levels or high BP or high uric acid, whatever. And so in such situations, still, as a physician, you cannot send the patient, so you have to use these types of prescriptions as well in your practice. I hope I have justified as much to the best of my knowledge.
Very, very good. It really helps us to understand how you take a case, a look at each patient, and understand where you are in the management of each case. So what the last thing that you said, it sounds as if a patient who comes in and presents with symptoms and yet over time has taken so many different drugs, you have to account for the drug, what the drug is doing to the body, whether it is taking away symptoms that were there with a natural disease and maybe even started new symptoms that were never there before.
Exactly. See, every time we can't blame the patients. Sorry to interrupt, but we can't blame the patients every time. All these patients who come to us, they don't have a homeopathic mindset. These patients have an allopathic mindset. They have come to the doctor for that particular symptom at that point of time. And they don't know that it is this symptom which has come to me now is basically an evolutionary symptom of a past symptom or a past disease syndrome, which I should report. And not necessarily that the doctor who is taking the history would always be asking that scenario. So I have to educate my patient that it is always a series of events. It's a concert. Today what I am seeing is the end result of the concert. So I should know as a homeopath, at least if I have to prescribe the constitutional remedy, to know the basic constitutional state. How were you before you were insulted? I mean, suppose in this case which I last discussed, that ailment after an insult. My boss insulted me and after that I'm getting chest pain. So I have to ask the patient, how was your nature? Or how were your physical generals before the insult? Were you very thirsty? What was the urine pattern? Everything else. But the patient would not remember. Doc, I can't remember. I don't know. I've always been that way. But he or she is not trained to remember that or not trained to report those symptoms. And that is why it is now come, the onus lies on the homeopath to know that if he or she is taking a particular drug, that allopathic drug or that herbal medicine, how it has modified this original basic state. If I don't know this, then I will lose the entire basic picture of the patient and I will only prescribe on what I am seeing now. But what I am seeing now is a partial simulimum, and what I would have prescribed originally is the basic simulimum or the constitutional remedy. The constitutional remedy is always the basic simulimum, how I have born with, the symptoms I have been born with.
Right. And Dr. Christina Chambreau, when she teaches about pet health, emphasizes at the beginning of every show how a person who is a pet owner must journal and keep a diary from the time that they get the pet, so that they know what their baseline is, what their normal is, how they are, and how they change over time. Their behavior, likes and dislikes, and everything changes over time. And in a way, we should probably teach parents to do the same thing and adults to start recording what they're feeling, whether it is on a month-to-month basis or a daily or weekly basis.
Actually, I compliment this because since 1970, since my father started practicing, he has followed this principle. Every single patient who enters this clinic has to compulsorily keep a record. Compulsorily. Whatever the case may be, whether we are dealing with case type 2 or case type 4 or case type 1, whatever. Once you have received a medicine, it is mandatory on your part as a patient to keep a daily diary. We train our patients to write. Many, many patients first refuse, and they don't have that importance of maintaining a daily diary. But over a period of time, we have to educate, we have to know tell them the importance, that there is something called as proving in homeopathy. It is not like a symptomatic herbal drug or not symptomatic allopathic drug where you take the drug, take it for days together, visit the doctor after 6 months, and he or she may change the prescription. For us, on a daily basis, you have to write what you have eaten, how have you felt, what were your moods today, whether it was a full moon night or a new moon night, whether you were affected by that, had you lately been to a seashore, were you affected by that, and over a period of time it has become a habit. So for us, it is not a very difficult proposition, because all our new patients also know that this clinic, it is mandatory to keep a record, and we have to give the doc the record. So, and it becomes so easy for us. We don't need to repeat medicines. We know what a first prescription is. We know how to give the second prescription. The potency can be easily decided. And basically, we don't over give the prescription. That means we do not keep on giving single remedy. More works wonders for us. It is only and only because if you can keep the daily diary record, it's extremely important. People don't realize this. But in the, even a practice, I have a practice of at least 60-70 patients per day. But even on all those 60 patients, I take out the time to read their diaries and prescribe the next dose on that. Because first prescription is very easy in homeopathy. It is the second prescription which is actually tests your real caliber as a homeopath. And the second prescription should be based only and only on the records which the patient brings to us the next time.
Okay, so we have a couple of folks waiting in the chat room today, and there is a Binpin Shukla who has posed a question, and it's up to you whether you want to give a short answer or save this as a longer answer for another show. He says, suggest a medicine for heart block, RCA 100%. What would a cardiologist do for medical management, especially for a patient who just wants homeopathy? Do you have any suggestions? So it's heart block.
Now,
okay.
Just now I told you about the fourth case type. A case type who has just come to you for blocks and just see the doctor. Homeopaths also ask questions in such a way. I mean, as a homeopath, he should have given me some basics about the patient, about the sick person. He has given me something about the pathology, the end result of the sickness. Nothing about the sickness, nothing about the sick patient, but only the end result of the sickness, that is RCA, is right coronary artery 100% block. While they were very well, if it's a proximal block, that means if it is earlier when the artery starts its formation, that is called proximal area, and later part of the artery is called the distal area. So if the proximal block, RCA 100%, then right coronary artery supplies the major part of the heart. So in such a situation, medical management, if the patient is hemodynamically stable, then I would still ask for physical generals and mental generals if I can get it. I would prescribe a constitutive remedy. If the patient is unstable, I would give symptomatic. And if the patient only wants for that particular block, then we have got certain drugs like Terminalia Arjuna. Terminalia Arjuna is an Indian herbal remedicine which can be given in mother tincture form. It is, or at least in 1x or 2x potency, to be repeated twice a day over a period of 2 or 3 months. The percentage of block can be decreased if it's a purely syphilitic plaque that is full of cholesterol and calcium calcification is less. And in nowadays times, we can actually measure the quantum of calcification in that plaque. With the help of CT scan, spiral CT scan, you can measure the quantum of the plaque containing calcium. If the calcium score is very high, then it is very, very difficult to dissolve the plaque or reduce the plaque in size, because calcification cannot be undone. If it's a cholesterol plaque, soft plaque, and certain medications, you can hope to decrease the size. So again now, this patient, I know nothing about the patient. I only know about the end results. So in such a situation, I can only suggest one medicine, that's Terminalia Arjuna. The second would be Sumbul, Ferula Sumbul, which I've already talked about in 2 or 3 previous shows. You can again try them out in Q, but then these two drugs are no guarantee. They may or they may not reduce the plaque. In addition, you can suggest lifestyle modification, changes in dietary habit. At the academy, we follow the blood group diet system. and we have been benefited. Our patients have benefited thoroughly well, as well as the exercises which one should follow. That depends upon, of course, the hemodynamic parameters as much as the patient can do. So this is the answer to your question.
Okay, are we ready to move back into Kent's repertory and learn from the master all about constriction in the chest?
What about two questions? Two more questions have been asked.
Oh, we have more questions?
Do
you want to save them for? Do you want to save them for the next time, or do you want to answer them now?
I'll go through them, and the fast answer would be there. One is from Dr. Zahir. He's in Mumbai, and he says, "Sir, while working in a semi-rural hospital as a homeopathic physician, I have seen quite a many practitioners who advise laboratory measurement of serum albumin in patients of malnutrition. I wish to know what is the role of measurement of serum albumin in these cases." Dr. Zahir, albumin is the most common lab investigations for visceral protein status. Visceral means body. Body protein status, we actually don't say serum protein. We always measure it in the form of albumin. But contrary to the popular belief, hypoalbuminemia, that is, less albumin in the blood, is rarely present in cases of isolated calorie malnutrition. When you have a case of calorie malnutrition, in isolated calorie malnutrition, you are less likely to get hypoalbuminemia. Hypoalbuminemia is a marker of systemic inflammatory response. Whenever there is a disease in which there is generalized inflammation, then you are more expected to have hypoalbuminemia. It is associated with increased morbidity and mortality in hospitalized patients. The daily liver synthesis of albumin is roughly about, say, I think 120 to 170, I'm not sure, but 120 to 170 milligram per kg body weight. And this albumin, once it's synthesized by the liver, it is distributed in the vessels, that is intravascular and extravascular spaces, wherever it is required. Now, during injury, the liver increases the production of these acute phase proteins. Whenever there's injury in the body, anywhere, liver has a marked increase of this acute phase proteins and decreases the albumin synthesis. This is coupled with extravasations and increased catabolism. And finally, this causes hypoalbuminemia. Hence, serum albumin is a poor index of the nutritional status. As a physician, as a cardiologist, I would not advocate serum albumin measurement in case of malnutrition or metabolic stress, because it's other way around. Serum albumin does not give you any information. It's not correct to measure, in my view. So this is the answer. The second question is from Dr. Abhijit Joshi from Pune, and he says, "Sir, I have just completed my BHMS and I'm working under a surgeon. My question is, in which condition is nil by mouth ordered? Why? And once this is ordered by the surgeon, how can we administer homeopathic medicines in such cases?" Well, Abhijit, enteral or oral feeding is contraindicated in all patients suspected to have peritonitis or intestinal obstruction or intractable vomiting or severe diarrhea. Especially once a person undergoes surgery, then post-surgical paralysis or paralytic ileus occurs. In or any abdominal pathologies or crisis, we always ask the patients to go for nil by mouth. Why? Because the basic reason is hypotension and hemodynamic instability due to any cause is associated with decreased intestinal blood flow. Whenever we have got hypotension, that's less BP, or hemodynamic instability, the body considers this, or the vital force considers GIT as a lesser important organ as compared to the heart or the kidney or the lungs. They are called vital organs. So the blood flow is shunted out. Physiological power, we call shunting of blood from less to more important vital organs. And that is why the peristaltic movement decreases. And what we get is a paralytic ileus. Ileus means paralysis or a temporary paralysis. Thus, there is low tolerance to any enteral feed, inclusive of liquids, in such cases, till the emergency is over. Total parenteral nutrition or IV fluids is advocated, and as far as administration homeopathic dilution is concerned, it may be rubbed on the skin of the patient, that is on the lips, or still better, one drop put below the tongue, but with the instruction that should not be swallowed. One drop does not cause any harm. So homeopathy medicines can still be given in such patients of nil by mouth. Rather, many post-operative patients, for example, post-LSCS patients, C-section patients who undergo cesarean sections, or they have got abdominal pain, or they are not passing flatulence, one of the finest drugs for such situations, Rafanus. Rafanus is radish. And one or two drops of radish or Rafanus 1M is given on the tongue. Nothing happens. The intestinal sounds return in only 1 to 2 hours, and the patient can be then asked to start the oral feeds. So we've been following day in and day out in such patients. So I hope you have understood why we advise nil by mouth. It is because of the shunting. The blood is basically shunted from the lesser important organ, the gastrointestinal tract, to a more important organ in cases of crisis.
That sounds like a real emergency. I wanted to thank those folks who are on Twitter right now and who are retweeting. We have Nutrition Quick Simple and Pacesetter Eclectica. People who let other people know about this show expand the reach of folks who can learn about homeopathy, about taking symptoms, keeping a journal of how you feel, which is also part of the healing process, just journaling. There's so much that we can learn here together, and I just wanted to send out a thank you to the folks who are listening and letting other people know. So let's see. I don't think we have any other questions chat,
yeah.
And so we're ready to move forward with our study.
Yeah, constriction, and we have already finished constriction asthmatic, and we had last time discussed Angostura Vera, the constriction band as from. The other sub-rubrics, we are not discussing all sub-rubrics, but certain sub-rubrics, yes. Constriction after coition after. It is staph urticaria, 1 mark, and a very, very common symptom of angina pectoris. Rather, many males, middle-aged males, who have a single vessel disease, particularly in the RCA block, what the gentleman, Dr. Shukla, had asked me the question, previous question, RCA, right coronary artery block. Now, such patients are likely to report not the usual kind of angina pectoris as chest pain or chest discomfort, or the pain which it starts from the chest and radiates to the left arm and the fingers. In RCA block, one is more likely to report angina variants. And one of the angina variants would be chest heaviness or chest pain radiating to the right side and aggravated during coition. So staph urticaria is a wonderful remedy, very frequently used. Unfortunately, very few people complain because of shyness that they are getting. I mean, they get extremely exhausted and they would beat around the bush if they would get chest pain but do not tell you the cause. So the physician has to ask this specifically in many cases because the sex life becomes very bad in such cases. And they keep on thinking for other matters. They would attribute it to psychological problems, but it may be simple angina pectoris, can be taken care of with staph urticaria. So,
can I ask you about this one specifically?
Yeah.
Very often in movies or television series, the characters or the main characters of the show would say, you know, they feel like they're having a heart attack after having sex, or, you know, something of that nature. Would that be what rubric we would look at?
Yeah, you would have, because the type of chest pain, you would not get a chest pain after coition. The heart attack will be mainly in the form of constriction in the chest. A band-like feeling or a constriction in the chest is a very typical sensation. It occurs after coition because after sex, a lot of calorie expenditure takes place, and the entire adrenaline system is charged to the maximum. In such a situation, there's a gross vasospasm, one. Second, the BP rises during the act. And third, this causes angina pectoris or may lead to heart attack. But the sensation, the presentation would be in the form of constriction rather than a chest pain, which is the more commoner form of presentation of a heart attack or angina pectoris. So constriction is quite common post-coital. One remedy which is not given here and which we use very often is naxthalmic also. It also has a symptom like this, but he's got oppression on the chest. There's a rubric, separate rubric called oppression. Oppression is on the chest. Constriction is sensation in the chest, inside. So there's a difference between oppression and there's a difference between constriction. If you get oppression, that means for this very same symptoms, caution after, it is nux vomica. For constriction, it is staphylococcus aureus.
Okay. That's pretty interesting. So I could add that nux vomica to the after caution. And if you're able to raise your sound a little, it would be good. We're kind of fading in and out today.
Okay. Now, can you hear me properly?
It's kind of difficult, but just keep going.
Okay. So then we have got the next rubric, constriction, cold air from. And we have got Bryonia, Phosphorus, Sabadilla, cold air from becoming and cold air, cold bathing. Now, this is very, very common constriction is in typical asthmatic patients, moment they get cold air. But more than asthma, more than bronchial asthma, such patients, they're very common emphysematous patients or patients who have a tendency to catch cold and the cold settles in the chest. And in such patients, whenever they are exposed to cold, even from an air condition, if the room is chilled out, they would get a sensation of constriction. So they need not require dust or they would not require pollens. They would only require a cold air. In such cases, yes, phosphorus is the key remedy. But phosphorus generally is not used symptomatically. It is more oftenly used as a constitutional remedy or a bigger remedy. But still, in such cases, if a single remedy has to be selected, phosphorus does the job. Then we have got constriction convulsive, and we have got three remedies: Asafoetida, Belladonna, and Cuprum-Met. And now this is very, convulsive constriction, this occurs in a certain type of epilepsies. But now, I don't know how many patients would actually report this, because I have never given any of these drugs, rather never have found patients to report sensation of constriction during convulsions, because they themselves, the convulsions only for a few seconds, 30 seconds or 1 minute. And after that, the patient either is unconscious or may not be conscious, but the patient is totally fatigued. But, so it's very difficult, although it may be found in the Cuprum-Met proving or Belladonna proving or Asafoetida proving. But convulsion, if it sets in, there are certain types of convulsions which starts from the chest and expand to the periphery, which is very common in Cuprum-Met. That is fine, but when we are talking about constriction, we actually don't see the constriction. We can't see it. It's a sensation. So the patient has to report. I don't know. I have never seen or never heard the patient report such a sensation. So for my clinical practice, I have never used any of these three drugs. Constriction. Skipping the other rubrics, we directly jump on to a rubric, constriction eating after. And another very, very common symptom this occurs, and the cause is cholelithiasis or gallstones. In such patients, you have dyspepsia. Dyspepsia, that means the food is swallowed with great difficulty, because the moment the food is swallowed, you can have a sensation of constriction after eating. Of course, pulsatilla is the remedy, and the remedy which we discussed earlier, that is feltauri, actually is this, it serves this purpose, that is constriction after eating is feltauri also. So pulsatilla is 2 marks, feltauri is 3 marks. Feltauri is not written, F-E-L, it is ox bile, which we have already discussed, I'm repeating it again, F-E-L, the second word is tauri, T-A-U-R-I. So please add that drug and 3 marks in constriction after eating.
I put some information on Homeopathy World Community in the Blog Talk Radio show with you. When you just click on your image on the right-hand column, you get to all the shows that you have done together. And the last show, you spoke about Feltowry, and I put a lot of information there so people can look it up.
Yeah, I saw that information, but still I'm repeating. Because
good.
We were, the drug is missing, and probably in Kent's time, Feltowry was not a drug, it was not proved, but in today's time, it is a proved drug, so it needs to be added. And it's a very important drug, as we saw. And this symptom particularly comes after during cholelithiasis, and that is why constriction after eating is important. Then obviously, constriction, exertion from typical arsenic, calcarea carb, natrum moor, spongia, veratrum valve. It's self-explanatory. We are not going to that. Another rubric is constriction during inspiration or inspiration during. And we have drugs, raffanus and sulfur. Now, this constriction, inspiration during can be found either in asthma or in abdominal complaints. In abdominal complaints, particularly when you have got an abdominal colic or say abdominal pathology, patients many times complain, "Doc, when I inhale, not when I exhale, but when I inhale, at that time, I feel a sensation of constriction in the chest." Although the pathology is in the abdomen, or post-operatively, if I've been operated, if I've got stitches in the abdomen at that time, or if I'm not passing gases post-operatively, if I have a paralytic ileus, many patients do complain clinically of constriction during inspiration in the chest and not in the abdomen. So here you can have, as I said, raffanus, unfortunately is given in single mark. We use it very often in our homeopathic practice for such cases. And moment the patient passes a certain number of gases, what we call borborygmi, or has an eructations, once you administer raffanus, the entire constriction sensation goes away, and it's a very good drug. So, of all the drugs, agaricus, asparagus, chamomilla, chelidonium, conium, drosera, miserium, raffanus, although all given 1 mark, sulfur is given in 2 marks, but we hardly use sulfur. We don't tend to use bigger drugs for small symptoms. Raffanus does serve the purpose.
Okay, and you skipped over expiring. So, was there
During expiring, this is a very common symptom like causticum. They occur in all lung disorders, for example, asthma or chronic bronchitis. So it's very common. Many patients would complain and self-explanatory. That's why certain subrubrics I'm taking specifically because I have many personal experiences of using certain drugs which are given 1 mark or they are not giving at all. And they specifically correlate to certain pathological conditions which are again very common. So, I purposely skipped off expiring during or falling asleep when. They are there. Constriction from flatulence, they are there, these drugs. But hardly ever such patients report. So, clinically, they are very good to look at in the books. But when you see in the patient's application, clinical applicability is very, very less. And that's why I've skipped off.
I see. So when we don't get this kind of, they're embarrassed or shy to say that I feel this constriction because I'm having passing gas, having flatulence. They don't typically come and tell you that, so we don't know.
Yeah, and you see, it becomes very, very difficult for asking every smallest of small thing to the patient. Certain patients are intelligent enough to report fine, very well, but these patients are very few and far apart. And even if we ask them to maintain a diary, such patients, would not, unless it is a very, very marked symptom, that, "Doc, whenever I pass gas, I get a feeling of constriction in the chest." If that is a symptom, and primarily that is the only symptom, then probably you can give Nux Vomica or Rheum. But they are extremely rare. So in clinical practice, we don't use such rubrics, or we hardly ever need to go to such rubrics and understand them.
That makes
then
good sense.
Okay. Otherwise, we'll never be able to finish even 1 page in the whole year. If we go over time.
Okay.
Then constriction in hydrothorax. constriction hydrothorax in. Now, hydrothorax, again, a very, very common, the hydrothorax is the old term. Hydro means water and thorax is chest. But that word is now not used now. In the common terminology, medical terminology used is pleural effusion. And you have got, lots of, pleural effusion. Let me come to pleural effusion. Pleural effusion does not present as chest pain. It presents as constriction, which is localized in that part where the effusion occurs. And the effusion is actually collection of water or a serous fluid, a watery type of fluid in between the in the pleural cavity that lies between the visceral pleura. Viscera means towards the lung side, the covering on the lung, and the parietal pleura, which is towards the chest wall side. So these two layers form what is called the pleural cavity. And that pleural cavity normally contains a very, very thin layer of pleural fluid. But in certain conditions, for example, you can have lymphoma, Hodgkin's lymphoma or non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, or you can have cancer of the lungs, or you can have mesothelioma of the lungs. In such situations, the excess amount of fluid is stored, and that is called pleural effusion. Even in heart attacks or tuberculosis, you can have pleural effusion. So pleural effusions have got lots and lots of reasons. It may be lymphoma, again, as I told you. It can be simple trauma. Then rheumatoid arthritis patients, for example, you may have joint pains or systemic lupus erythematosus. You may have joint pains, but they are autoimmune diseases, and in the lungs, they cause pleural effusion. So in such cases, you can have a serous collection of the fluid in pleural effusion, and the patient would complain of a constricting sensation, not chest pain per se, but a constricting sensation, and which typically increases with respiration. So basically, it is moment the patient inspires, the pain, the constriction sensation is there, the tightness is there, and the pleural pain disappears. Means that inflammation has subsided or the pleural effusion has developed dry. There are two types of pleural effusion. You have got a dry pleurisy, that means the fluid completely goes, and when you have got wet pleurisy, wet pleurisy means hydrothorax. So constricting sensation is very, very common, and it's a very bad sensation because till the pleural effusion is resolved, the patient is continuously complaining of that sensation. It's a very weird sensation and a troublesome sensation. The patient cannot walk. Many times the patient has to only rest, but even rest does not give relief because it is only during inspiration that the patient feels aggravated. Now he can't stop inspiring, so he does not get any rest. In allopathy, one of the measures used is tapping. You introduce a big bore needle, a large bore needle inside the pleural cavity, take a syringe and pull out the entire fluid and the thing collapses. And then you introduce a particular chemical and the two layers, the parietal pleura and the visceral pleura, join together, and this is called pleurodesis. So you destroy the pleural cavity and finish it off. But in homeopathy, we have got excellent remedies. Apis and Spigelia specifically for the left side of pleural effusion. Even if it's a pleural effusion, may or may not be causing constriction, still Spigelia works, and of course Apis, right side. So we have got Apis and Spigelia, two mark remedies. Right side pleural effusion having constricting sensation, we have got Apis, and left side is Spigelia.
Okay, that was very educational. So for folks who are following us along on cancer repertory in the chest, page 827, we just finished hydrothorax in constriction and during inspiration.
And how do you know that one person has got a pleural effusion or pleurisy? It's very easy. There are three symptoms. Number one, first would be there will be a persistent pain during inspiration, which will be localized. It will be not pain, that constricting sensation will be there. Second, that patient is likely to have a non-productive dry cough, a non-productive cough or a dry cough, and that cough further irritates and causes constriction sensation. Then you can have an evening rise of temperature and not a high-grade fever. It will be a low-grade or a moderate-grade fever with no chills, no sweating. It will only be a discomfort and a feverishness. And in later stages, there would be breathlessness if the pleural effusion is too high. So these are the methods, and one of the finest, the most simplest method is if you tap, if you percuss on the area, you will have a stony dull note. Stony dull note is a very, very important hallmark, a clinical hallmark that the gentleman or the lady has got pleural effusion, or the child has got pleural effusion. So it's very easy to diagnose hydrothorax, and drugs like APIS and Spigelia, actually we have seen many cases and we have got evidence based in such cases. They decrease the pleural effusion, there's no need for tapping, and in many cases we have got CT scan evidence that the effusion goes away, resolves. Of course, depending upon the case, we give in millisimal scale, 0 by 1 or 0 by 2. The repetition depends upon the intensity of the effusion and the cause. And so in such situations, there are times when you don't get the pen picture of a particular drug. So these drugs, symptomatic drugs, do help. And definitely, once the effusion goes away or the dry pleurisy goes away, the constriction automatically stops.
Is this something that would be the evolution of an asthmatic individual?
No, not. Yeah. It could be the last stage of an asthma also. What happens in asthma, if I have an asthma of a long standing duration, then this causes causes a great strain on my right side of the heart, because the right side of the heart supplies the lungs. Also, at the same time, it may lead to emphysema or chronic bronchitis. Now, when it leads to emphysema or chronic bronchitis, then actual pathological changes appear in the lungs. What pathology appears? We have got lots and lots of balloons in the lungs, and these balloons are called as alveoli. Now, in long-standing asthmatics, these alveoli collapse, or multiple alveoli merge together to form a single balloon. And when they do so, they lose the entire elasticity, they lose their function, and it becomes only a dead space. In such a situation, the blood supply to them is lost, and the blood then percolates out, and it may fill the pleural cavity, and you have got pleural effusion. So long-standing asthmatics, emphysema cases, chronic bronchitis cases, we can have pleural effusion, pleurisy also.
Would we be able to see this in the alveoli merging together? Would we see this in an X-ray? How would we determine
no,
it?
No. By CT scan. A CAT scan.
A CT scan would tell us?
A CT scan, it would reasonably tell you that you can have emphysema or destruction in the lungs going on. And what sort of destruction it is. It's a collapse, the entire part has collapsed, or you have a consolidation, that means a filling of the fluid inside the lung parenchyma, or you have got fibrosis, that means an end-stage disease, again the lung tissue has shrunk, or you have pleural effusion. Everything is clearly visible on high-resolution CT scan, which we call HRCT, high-resolution CT scan of the chest or thorax.
Thank you.
So, it's 10 o'clock here. And
yes.
We have.
It is time to say thank you again for all of this education. And for answering all the questions, as usual, we do welcome your questions. You can send them to Dr. Adil at his website and check out all of his educational programs at www.homeoacad.org. And you can contact me at homeopathyworldcommunity@gmail.com. Please visit Homeopathy World Community and read all the different articles that everyone is posting. Get involved and share this information. We appreciate that so much. Happy 4th of July. And I kind of did want to send out a prayer for the folks in India. I have been reading the news about the flooding that has devastated.
That's a place called. In fact, I have to visit that place for a 3-day workshop on obstetrics and gynecology. My mother and myself were invited by the government of Assam to visit that place. I don't know how we are supposed to go, because the main river supplying Assam is Brahmaputra, and Brahmaputra annually, the moment the month of July starts, it's floods, and the floods. Assam also has got one of the largest reservoirs the jungle, what we call as wildlife park, the Kaziranga National Park. All the animals and the human population, of course, is devastated and dislodged from their original positions. It's so sad. Years, every single year it happens, and I don't know how long it is supposed to happen. During the entire year when the floods are not there, people or the government possibly are not doing something. And when the time comes, then they have to run helter and skelter. But all said and done, it's a sad state, a sorry state. And we really do feel for our brethren there, out there, who are suffering. Hopefully, next year would be fine for them.
Right. I think about situations of this nature, even at the coastal plain of North Carolina, where we live, and hurricanes are common, that it would seem logical that the government would put restrictions on where people could settle. I know that flooding obviously makes the area more fertile, but it seems as if so many lives are lost that there should be restriction about where people would be able to live, so that we don't see this as an annual event. It said 2,000 villages were destroyed and 500,000 people have been displaced, and so much death and sickness.
Exactly, but then hurricanes come once in a while. They don't come annually. Whereas in India, this Brahmaputra flooding is an annual event. Moment you know, and it always occurs in the month of monsoon, that is end of June and starting of July, it will last till August. So we know this. Now, since we know this, then the steps need to be taken from the onset of May. The moment the month of May begins, the entire population can asked to stay somewhere else. The wildlife in the Kaziranga National Park, that needs to be taken care of. Even if you can't do much about it, you can do this much.
It's called preparation, right?
Exactly.
Being prepared. Okay, so we will see you. Let's see, you're going to be away on this month. I'm looking at the calendar now. It's July 4th. So you're going to be away on
11th and 18th.
11th, so the next 2 weeks. If I'm around, I might just rebroadcast some of your old shows, and that way people can call in and listen. Okay.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
Okay. Take care now, and have a great day.
Thank you, and happy Independence Day to you once again. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.